This is Ronald Wells.
And what brings him here, Ellen?
He's the owner of the R. Wells Gallery at 725 Warren Street, right across the
interesting
street.
Interesting name for a gallery. How did you come up with that name?
Well, I wanted something that best reflected me, and I figured my name was the best way to do it.
And you've had a gallery elsewhere before you opened this gallery, right?
I have. I had a gallery in Binghamton, New York for 10 years, and it was also the R. Wells Gallery.
Hmm.
It is astounding to me that the R. Wells Gallery was in Binghamton, New York.
And why is that, Ellen?
Because I am from, one might say, Binghamton, New York.
One might say that. You were nearby, actually.
I was
right?
born in Binghamton, New York, actually. And when I was talking to R. Wells over the phone.
I think the R stands for Ronald. Can we call you Ronald?
You can, just not Ronnie. That's reserved for grandparents.
Oh, okay. I was talking to Mr. Wells over the,
good over one, the Ellen.
Phone. And he said he had just driven from Binghamton. I was astounded. I mean, it was, and when we, I said, well, actually, I'm not from Binghamton. I'm from Kirkwood.
And then I was astounded.
And we were astounded together.
Yes.
Because I was indeed from Kirkwood, New York.
And my grandparents were from Kirkwood, New York, and I'm there every couple of weeks visiting family still.
And I knew Mr. Wells' grandmother.
Wow.
Yes, she did.
So, anyway, we got that cleared up.
Excellent.
And he's here to talk about his gallery, though, not about Binghamton, New York.
Maybe we could figure out other people you know in common.
Well, I'd like to answer your question first, Tom.
That's right.
Yes.
But you call me Thomas.
All right, Thomas, you got it. You had asked me about whether or not I had an intern,
uh-huh.
And it's really interesting. I had an intern in Binghamton for years who actually was from the local high school, much like Abel Jake Ebel. That gentleman, yes, correct. He still comes here. He got a four-year scholarship to SVA. Full-paid scholarship, and is an excellent artist, but he comes to Hudson because he loves the artistic community here so much. Anytime I have an opening, and he loves to work them for me and to get to know the crowd and the people that are here in Hudson. So
cool.
My interns, I guess, are going to follow me I go, much like yours won't leave.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And this is your Binghamton intern.
This is my Binghamton intern.
What's his name? Maybe I know him.
His name is Dylan Utter.
No. Sorry.
That's okay.
No, wait, is the Binghamton Gallery still open?
No, the Binghamton Gallery was actually closed about a year and a half ago. And I had moved to South Beach, Miami to take a little break. And then when I finally realized...
No gallery
in Miami, no.
Just fun. Yeah.
I mean, every once in a while you have to have fun.
Yeah. Well, tell that to Ellen.
Why?
Because she is a full-time funster.
Oh, well then we need to hang out sometime.
There.
When I realized how much I was missing the change of seasons and missing the state of New York, I was trying in my brain to find a place that I would really enjoy moving to because I was free to do whatever I wanted. And I came home to visit family and decided to take a run through the Hudson Valley. And the first and last place I stopped was Hudson. And I came into town and I thought, okay, I'm looking for a sign that this might be a great place. And within 36 hours, I had been asked on two dates, had three drinks bought for me, and was invited to two dinner parties, and found the apartment of my dreams online.
Wow.
So within 36 hours, I could have not been single. I could have had all the dinner and drinks I wanted and signed a lease and was ready to go.
You know, it's what Deanie Lamo says. It's absolutely true. He moved here from California, and he said, I met more people in the red dot in 2 weeks than I did in California in 2 years.
I have met more people in this town.
It's
unbelievable.
It is very friendly.
It is a friendly town. Now, I have something that's sort of a little bit more of a play on that I say to people from New York that come up here, and they're like, well, how do you best describe Hudson? I said, well, you can be in New York, and you can go to the Standard Hotel, to the bar on the rooftop, and spend several $100s and walk out with a headache and no money in your wallet, or you can go to a restaurant here like Fish and Game, sit down and meet the owner of the Standard Hotel. So take your pick.
How do you like that, Ellen?
I like it.
I like
the
it a lot.
The Standard Hotel. Where is the Standard Hotel?
Oh, my God. You are going to ask me that now. The Standard Hotel is in Manhattan. It's on the east side.
Oh,
and it's quite a lovely hotel, but it has a gorgeous bar on the rooftop, which is the place to be.
And you met the owner here.
I met the owner here.
That's
You're
the
not going to meet him in a room full of hundreds of people on right. top of his own
well, that's
hotel.
That's the incredible thing, that when you meet interesting people here, mm-hmm. you can actually talk and engage them. And I mean, you know, many people come to that feeling after they've met, well, you know who.
And they become BFFs.
Yeah, exactly. You get it. You're picking it up.
As many BFFs.
Yeah, but I've never met anyone in Hudson yet that wasn't interesting, which is the very odd part about living here, and it's kind of why I'm always happy to be here.
I could send you to a couple.
Please don't. Don't ruin my fantasy.
No, it's true. It's a lot. And the point is, people will talk to you, and you know, you go to the bars of Hudson. Not that Ellen ever does. Yeah, right. You go to the bars of Hudson, and people... Actually, that's how we first met
again and again.
Really? Oh,
again.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, sure.
It was at the
Could
Red
we
Dot.
Know which bar?
It was
the Red Dot. Right. Here I was thinking
you
it was...
You met at the Red Dot.
We met at the Red Dot by the fire pit out back, and there was snow on the ground. I can even tell you who was sitting around there at that point.
That's right.
There was you, me, Denise,
The legendary
Denise. Mm-hmm. I think that was it.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe Ursula.
Yeah. The not-so-legendary Ursula.
Oh, I love her.
Wow. I do, too. But she's not
I love her.
Ursula.
You know Ursula.
Have I ever met Ursula?
She's the toothpick who works at the Red Dot.
The toothpick?
Yeah, tall and thin. You've met Ursula.
Oh, well.
In any case, that's when I was my first question, is that beard cultivated, or are those natural curls?
These curl of their own accord.
Seriously?
I've never had a beard in my life like this, and I started growing it. Actually, its one-year anniversary will be the 15th of this month.
Mm-hmm. You're the only person I know whose beard has anniversaries.
Hey, you know, I mean, it's a lot of work.
Are you serious, Ellen?
I am.
I give my fingernails anniversaries.
Really?
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, you're not.
Well, when I grow one of them long, you know, I remember the day
like
I started.
Like a guitar player.
Well, you know, you can just have fake ones put on. It's much less time consuming.
That's true. And they don't demand gifts. No, that means.
Sorry about that. So, yes, the beard.
For those who can't see, because you're on the radio.
Exactly.
Ronald, if you're here in Hudson Ever, and you stop by the gallery or walking the streets, you'll see a man with an incredible beard. It's not only big and bushy, but it's got these curls that I assume were cultivated, but
no, there are
you
several.
You mean that he would put little curling irons?
I didn't want to ask
hair.
Him exactly how he did it, but
there are several people in town that have actually been spreading the rumor, and you know who you are, that I perm my beard. But anybody that really knows me would know that I would be the first one to say, hey, you don't have to wear your beard like that. Did you know you can perm it? Look at mine. But even with my mother, it's been a little bit of a mystery. We spent 2 days going through 4 generations of paintings and photographs trying to figure out where this beard came from. And, of course, being a little naughty and cheeky like I can be, I looked at my mother and I asked her, what did the mailman look like? She looks at me, gets a little glint in her eye, and her exact response was, he didn't have a beard. Never got the answer. That was it.
Okay, Ron, what was the name of the mailman?
I don't know, but you probably know.
Curtis Andrews.
Wow. Oh, did he have a curly hair or a beard?
I don't remember. All I remember is he whistled continuously. You would walk in the post office. And he would be whistling. And the woman who worked there had to quit, finally, because she said it drove him crazy because he
whistled. It would me, too.
A sort of tuneless whistle, well, constant. You
if
know.
You remember my grandfather at all, he would do the same thing. And he even did it in church a couple of times.
Is this
he burst
thing?
Out whistling. I don't know. I don't whistle
thing?
At all.
Let's whistle through life or some
I guess
stuff
so.
Like
I
that?
I don't know.
But it's a good
no
way.
No one ever told
well,
me. I
don't know.
Whistle.
Have you noticed the mailman who constantly talks on his phone as he's walking?
No. You
oh,
mean the
he
Hudson
has a headset
mailman?
On.
He has a headset
yes.
on. Yes.
Oh.
Jake, are you whistling in the background there? Okay. The mailman constantly talks on his phone while he's walking. And, you know, I'll be upstairs in my office, and he'll I'll suddenly hear this voice coming towards the door. And I think, oh, somebody's come to...
He's warning you that he's coming.
Instead, I go down, it's the mailman. And he keeps talking and keeps walking.
Wow.
It's quite annoying.
Mm.
But I guess that's...
He doesn't talk.
Life in the modern... No, he talks on the phone constantly.
Oh, he's talking on the phone.
How much could you talk on the phone while you're doing your rounds as a postal worker?
You would be shocked.
Yeah, I would be.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
I'm not shocked by much.
Maybe it's he sees it as a boring job, and he's just trying to, you know,
liven it up.
I guess.
I'll tell you another thing. I was in a waiting room today. People making phone calls at full voice in a waiting room.
This is terrible. This is terrible.
What waiting room were you in?
A hospital waiting room.
Oh yeah.
It's like, are you serious?
That's bad. That's really bad.
I was angry. And you know how I get, Ellen, when I'm angry.
Did you do anything about it?
Did you
ask them?
No, I steamed the way I always do.
Actually, I was in a waiting room in the hospital the other day, and a woman said, "Do you mind if I make a phone call?"
Uh-oh.
I mean, she was somewhat disabled, so she would have had to get up, you know, go out in the hallway or whatever. And, of course, I gave my consent. But
I wish she asked. That was nice.
Couldn't she have texted?
Yeah, she asked. I don't know.
Yeah, what's up with that? Why not text? You know?
I don't text.
Oh, see, I'm the worst culprit with that because I can't text fast enough.
I noticed your thumbs are sort of...
So I use voice recognition, so I talk to my phone, which that turns it into text.
Does that really work?
It really does work. You'd be shocked.
Is this some, like, fancy new phone thing?
No, it's on everybody's phone.
I have this on my phone here?
Yeah,
I just
Tom
got
has
this.
A new phone.
If you go into your text messaging, you will on the bottom left see a small microphone. You just have to tap that, talk to your phone.
No, that's not going to happen.
But if you want to write a book, it's great.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yes, it can be.
So you think, Ellen, we should get to the real business of this interview?
I think we should ask about what kind of art is in the R.
Oh, I've even forgot why we were here.
That's all right.
Yeah, right.
Okay. It was great.
We can get, I mean, we just. I just thought you might want to do a little promotion here.
We totally can. Do you want to talk about the current show, or would you like to talk about what
Let's
our
talk
Wells
about
Gallery?
Both. Let's start by talking about your experience as a gallerist. Do you call yourself a gallerist, a curator, or an art seller?
I call myself Ronald. I don't...
He's a facilitator.
No.
I love what I do, but if one was to really take the title of what I do, I'm not going to say gallerist because I just think that title is so scary. I'm a purveyor of things that I believe in, that I like, that make me happy. I'm not going to sell anything that I don't believe in via the product or lineage or provenance. Or anything that I think is an inferior product. So
I like that purveyor. Yeah. Ellen, I consider myself a purveyor of the truth.
Oh, that's excellent.
Right. Right.
So purveyor is a good term.
It's a great word. Nobody uses it anymore. It's sort of like
it is good.
Twitter pate. No one uses that either, and I love that word.
Yeah. So you do see yourself very much as in commerce, right? I mean,
I do. I have several things I deal in when it comes to the world of fine art, mm-hmm. Which is defined by paintings, photography, sculpture, decorative arts would be furnishings for the home. When it comes to fine art, I deal in primary market. I also deal in secondary market.
What does that mean, primary and secondary market?
Primary market would be works of art that are produced now by living artists that have not been owned by somebody else previously. Uh-huh. Secondary market would fall into works by... You know, Grandma Moses, for instance, would be a secondary market artist. And I have a large roster of works by secondary market artists. I don't put them out a lot simply because I don't like to overexpose that collection. I have a lot of clients that enjoy the privilege of saying, I was the first to get this. It has not been publicly seen. And that actually adds to the value a little bit as well. The minute something is out there and put out there and has gone through the auction market, the value can go one direction or the other. It all depends.
So do you have, like, private viewings at a...
I do.
Here at the gallery or
I have off-site? most of the private viewings are at the gallery, but many times my clients want me to bring the pieces to their home to see how they fit into there. Or if they're clients that are not within a couple of days of travel, I will ship the item to them mm-hmm. on approval and let them do what they want to do. If they
so
want
you
to.
Have a bigger inventory of secondary.
I do. I actually have a couple of warehouse spaces here in town that I rent to store it.
Wow.
And it's odd for me because I've always had larger brick and mortar places where I could keep everything right on hand. I mean, the gallery in Binghamton was almost 10,000 square feet. Mm. So here I am squeezed into about 645 square feet, and it changes the whole name of the game.
Where was the gallery in Binghamton?
Okay, do you remember the old Ansco plant on Emma Street, off of Main Street, almost before you got to the Johnson City Arch?
The Arch, yes.
You remember the Arch?
I certainly know the Arch.
Yes, well, there was on the right-hand side a 145,000 square foot factory, and I was on the fourth floor, and I remember people asking, you know, why aren't you opening downtown where all the other galleries are? Why aren't you opening at street level? My theory has always been for business that you create your own business and that you don't really count on what comes in off of the street because you never know what could happen on the street when you have the rest of the world going on around you. But Hudson, I have to say, a little different story. A dear friend of mine here in town said to me, don't discount the street. I'm going to say, as a testament to this street, it is doing very well by me. I like being on Warren Street. I like the people I'm meeting on Warren Street. I like the clients I am establishing on Warren Street. So it's kind of fantastic.
And you're in the 700 block.
I am. I think it's the chicest block on the whole street.
Well,
of course, you're there.
Well, yeah.
Of course.
And Zach Foyer.
And we've got that great hotel opening up next door. And we've got the tattoo parlor across the street.
Well, you've arrived at a very interesting time because a couple of years ago, the people who were in the 700 block, as it's called, including the Crimson Sparrow mm-hmm. and Wonder Bar mm-hmm. and Photographics mm-hmm. Solutions,
yes,
things were just beginning to pick up there. And but the 700 block was not considered, if I may say so, as part of the business district. In fact, there was a sign that said business district this way, leading them downtown.
Mm. Wow.
And they had a public, a meeting where everybody could come and express their opinions about what was happening. And the mayor agreed to move the sign. But remember, Tom, they had these... the street lights up there were different than those.
There were those
below.
Ugly
cobra.
Yeah, cobra style street lights.
Oh,
really ugly.
Well, you know, I'll confess. The first time I came to Hudson was probably about 27 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't get out of the car. I came back several
years. You scored
years,
through the window.
I just looked right through the window. But then when I was a student in college, I had come back at one point with some friends. And I looked around and I thought, okay, things are changing here a little bit. But I started looking at the prices of houses and buildings here at that time. So then when I got back to New York as a student, and this was at a time when the rents started going up in New York, I would always say, well, if you don't like it, you can get a whole house in Hudson for X amount of money. Haha, the joke's on me. I wished at that point I had bought about 10 of them.
There are some people who did do
yes,
that.
Yes, they were very smart people.
You're quite the landlord, aren't you?
No, oh, I'm
no,
not.
No, okay. I confuse you with somebody else.
But the 700 block, I love the 700 block. I really do. I tell people we're on the right side of the train tracks up here on the 700 block. I tell them that we are at the top of the hill at the 700 block.
Wait a minute. I thought we were on the right side of the train
Who's
tracks.
Who's we?
We, WGNC.
Oh, well,
wait
we
a minute. Which side of the building are the train tracks on for this?
They're right over here. And you're there.
You're on the other side.
You're on the other side.
Right. I guess that's it right. just depends on which side of the park you're on.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Excellent.
So were you an art history major?
My master's is in American 18th and early 19th century decorative arts, not fine arts. And, you know.
Did you do that at Bard?
I did not do that at Bard. I did that at FIT and then transferred to Hunter. Hmm. Bard would have been nice.
I don't know. Was there a program?
They actually,
that's pretty new, that program, I believe.
If I remember correctly, they had just opened up the program for masters in decorative arts. If I remember correctly, they had a location in Manhattan on 86th Street, was it?
Right.
Right. But I looked into the program and I just couldn't, for the amount of money and for what was happening, I thought in the long run, you know, Hunter's a great college. I'm going to finish there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about what you call a secondary market and need for warehouse space.
Yes.
There that seems to be what's happening, isn't it, Tom, where people are coming up with big collections that they have to store someplace, and storage up here is much less expensive. I'm thinking of the gallerists who...
I'm thinking of my book collection that
your book collection.
Still haven't brought into my house yet.
Well, the great thing about that is there are now facilities around here that are climate controlled.
That's
Actually, the facility where I keep all my spaces had just opened all their climate controlled facilities. So I was like the third person in, and I was like, oh, gosh, this is great. I'll take that one, that one, that one, and that one. And the whole time I was moving items in from Binghamton, from the warehouses there, I noticed that there were many other gallerists and people with large art collections locally that they were moving into these spaces. Pretty incredible.
Yeah.
What about your grandmother's teacup collection? Did you bring that with you?
Well, the irony about it, when she passed away, my grandmother was a master of collecting, and there was maybe 100 plus porcelain birds, 200 music boxes, 100 and some odd teacups. And the whole time when the Jack Shaman Gallery had opened in Kinderhook and Nick Cave was the opening exhibit, I'm looking at the sculptures and I'm thinking, maybe grandmother was onto something here with all of this. So I actually did bring the birds back with me this trip, not the teacups, but I've got the birds. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but they're kind of cool.
So in the primary market,
yes, sir.
Do you represent people exclusively, or is it usually just
I don't represent people exclusively. There are some people that really feel a need to control that. My theory is if I'm doing right by my artists, then they're going to want to stay with me anyways. And I also I know my place in the world. You know I'm not at the top of the food chain, but I'm very happy at where I am, and I'm very happy to be here in Hudson. And No. I think that out of courtesy, as long as they're doing well by me, that they wouldn't go anywhere else to compete within a certain amount of square miles. And most of the artists I work with, I've been working with now for 7, 8, 9 years. So I have long-term established relationships with the artists I represent in the primary market.
Now, your current show, is that considered primary or secondary? Because it's a kind of unique situation, right?
It's an extremely unique situation. We would have to put this under secondary market because the artist had passed away in 1987.
And we're talking about R. Giusto.
Gerald DiGiusto.
Right.
Yes, Gerald DiGiusto. It was curious. I had gotten a phone call, just to run through this quickly, from a lovely lady in 2006, end of 2006, beginning of 2007. And she had been referred to me by the Everson Museum in Syracuse to appraise a collection of sculpture. I made the phone call. I didn't ask too many questions. I just don't think that's a great idea to do that. It's already invasive enough that you're being invited into somebody's home. So I went out to the house. She took me out to the barn, and she starts clearing away these things that are blocking this sculpture in the barn. And I see the first piece, and I said to her, oh, that's by Gerald DiGiusto. She asks me, how do you know that? And I said, when I was a student in school, it was the dollar rack at the Strand bookstore on Broadway, and I saw that catalog, and that piece was on the front cover. So we look some more, and I'm realizing that it is a collection of his works from 1957 until his death in 1987, some pieces being 9 feet tall, some pieces being 9 inches tall, but well over 100 pieces.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that many.
Over 100, and they were in there for 20 years. You know, I mean, if you think about it. So really fantastic. I mean, all the photo documentation, the original artist drawings. I mean, it's really just, it's kind of like opening Tut's tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been great. I do a new show of his work every couple of years, pull out some new pieces that people have not seen. And the show that's up now
Is about a dozen pieces?
Or? Oh, it's a little more than a dozen. Yeah. It's maybe about 25 pieces in there, ranging the whole time period. Mm-hmm. But it's been wonderful. I mean, the people of the town have loved it. The clients are loving
it. Yeah, fantastic.
It's been a lot of fun, for sure.
Interestingly, because the pieces are all, as you said, different sizes. And each seems unique, but yet you can see the consistency of his work. You know, I mean, it's of a piece.
It's very angular, and his understanding of how dark and light play off of each other is very intense and very obvious in his work. And you'll also notice in all of his pieces that there is this constant play between exact opposites and the balance that they create. I mean, it's fantastic. And seeing how this plays out over time and how it changes over time is pretty intense.
So his wife is still alive?
Yes, she is still alive.
So,
and she's a lovely, lovely lady.
You're basically representing her then, I guess.
Absolutely, yes.
And this is like a long-term plan of how to reveal his work?
We've been working together now for 7 going on 8 years, and it's...
From a scholarly point of view, have you kind of documented each piece to, you know, create a catalog resume or something like
Everything that? Everything was documented paper-wise long before I ever had gotten to it. All the paperwork, the catalogs, everything of his work had been documented when he passed away by friends of his and colleagues at Cortland College. So there is a complete, I mean, there's just multiple folders of letters, photographs, everything chronologically put together, you know, the listing of where all of the pieces are. And and it's great because the pieces that are here, some of them, there's amazing photographs of when they were first created and shown in the 1950s in Florence, Italy, or some of the pieces that he created while he was in Japan and he first had shown them at Yale University. So it's also kind of interesting.
He attended Yale, right? Or taught there?
He taught at Cortland and he taught at Syracuse, but he did not teach at Yale. He got his MFA, exactly.
And he worked with Joseph Albers.
He certainly did.
See that influence in sort of the purity of the design, or, you know, the kind of solidity of the...
Well, absolutely. And there's an entire grouping of pieces that were produced in the first half of the 1970s before Joseph's death that are so evidently, you know, his having worked with him, even right down to the color choices of mm-hmm. that, you know, that brick red, the safety yellow, the burnt umber orange. I mean, it's just so purely 70s. And there really is so little sculpture from the 1970s. So it's a real pleasure to have so much of it.
So the curiosity is, why did he kind of withdraw from the art world?
It wasn't that he withdrew from the art world. He passed away at the age of 59. You know, he was really just beginning to come into his own. He was constantly working. Galleries were showing him. Museums were showing him. But he also really enjoyed working with the kids at the college. And he loved to travel with them. And he loved to show them what was out there. And I mean, and for him, unfortunately, when he passed away, he was doing a class for Syracuse University overseas in Florence. And it was for the students about the art of bronze casting when he got the phone call. And they said, you know, you need to come home. You know, you have maybe 2 weeks left. And so, I mean, he passed away doing what he loved most of all. And I think that to him, the kids and the college were far more important than the glamour of the art world. But
so why did his wife delay the unveiling of all the work? And
I think everyone mourns in their own way and in their own time. She was ready. Yeah. She was ready. These are not questions that if these are not answers she has volunteered.
Right.
And these are not questions I would ask.
Sure.
I'm just honored that I have been given the chance to be able to do this for her, because she's a splendid person, and for him to show his work. It's been great.
Is that the only situation like that you represent?
No, there are things that happen like this quite often. I can't always speak about them.
Sure.
Sometimes they're very privately done. But that's probably the one that's most vivid in my mind. You never know how these things are going to come around or come about or what they're going to be like. Here's a for instance, coming up this next year, I'm doing a show of a female photographer whose name I won't reveal until I've got the contract signed. But I'm meeting her in East Hampton next Tuesday. And she has some of the most amazing photographs of John and Yoko Ono and of the filming of the movie Easy Rider and behind the scenes, some rather explicit things that were going on the set that most people did not know about. And she's a wonderful woman. And I'm looking forward to doing that show next year. But, you know, she just had a retrospective of her work that closed at the Museum of Modern Art in Dublin. She has another major show coming up in London, and the Smithsonian Museum is archiving everything right now for her so that everything will be ready to go off for the museum to keep in their records. And this is a very exciting show, and I'm very excited to be able to do this next year, and I think it will be the first show for spring.
Great.
So are you going to, how often do you think you're going to be changing exhibitions? Do you have any?
Next year's pretty booked up. I definitely will not be changing exhibitions during the winter period for no other reason than I believe my job is to best represent the artists as much as I possibly can. And I think for me personally at least, to have a show running, especially if it's anything like last winter, freezing cold, I don't think it's fair to my artists when there isn't going to be anybody roaming the streets. Right. So I would rather, I'd say the first show is going to be in April and we'll be running through December next year. So I have six shows booked for next year already, but I may add another one or two.
Mm-hmm. When does the DiGiusto come down?
This show comes down after I get back from Art Basel in Miami. So I should be returning on the 9th. I will probably start taking it apart on the 11th of December.
Because I'll be there too, you know.
Oh, will you? How nice.
No.
I was going to say, we'll meet for sushi.
And the R. Wells Galleries at 725 Warren Street. Do you keep any regular hours or is it by appointment? Or?
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday from 11 to 5. And if you can't make those hours, give me a call. I'm more than happy to open for you at any other time.
You know, Ellen, one of my favorite words comes from the gallerists or the art world.
Yes.
Provenance. Don't you love that word?
Provenance. Provenance.
It's a great word.
Yes. I love it.
It's everything.
It is everything, isn't it?
It is.
It is, with all the, you know, fakery and other things that take place in the world. But, you know, that you can prove, I mean, you can come up with fake provenance, too, sometimes.
The provenance of
the great
scarf.
Van Meegeren came up with the provenance of the scarf.
This scarf came from Third Avenue.
Excellent.
In the Gramercy Park area of New York City.
Do you personally curate your scarf collection?
I do.
But wait a minute. Do you have photographs of your purchasing the scarf there?
No.
And do you have witnesses?
Oh.
And do you have proper documentation? Have we done a carbon test on the scarf to make sure it's really that old?
No, this topic
this
of fake,
pretty old.
This whole topic of fakery, you know, intrigues me. And I was reading recently that it's in sports memorabilia. It's outrageous. Apparently, the estimates are 90% of sports
baseballs
are all fake.
Baseball cards.
90% are fake. Not
really?
The cards so much. The sign stuff and the... This was this and this was that. You know, it's very...
Well, geez.
Yeah, don't buy baseball memorabilia.
I won't. I mean,
or sports memorabilia.
I mean, if anyone's interested, though, my mother did just hand me back three boxes of my Star Wars trading cards.
That's cool.
I know they're right.
See, you've been collecting for a long time.
Oh, yes.
No figurines?
No. Jaws trading cards.
Yeah.
Star Wars trading cards. Superman trading cards.
Well, guess what? I have War of the World. Not War of the Worlds. Mars Attacks.
Oh,
originals.
Wow. Yeah.
You don't.
I do. Why, you know them?
Do you have... I know you have... I know about your hubcap collection.
Oh, that's... You know.
And your license plate collection.
And my empty beer cans.
Empty beer cans. That's the one.
I don't think that'll work, but
no.
The trading cards could be an interesting show on
its own.
I got
quite a pretty penny from my hubcap collection.
In scrap?
Exactly. But it's an ongoing collection, because as I told Ellen, there's a secret spot that I've dug out, literally... It seems like a couple feet away, hubcaps just keep turning up.
You dug it out?
Yes. Well, I think nature dug it out, and, you know.
I was going to say, you created your own sweet spot for collecting. Nice. Nice.
You know? It's like that barn you walk into and suddenly discover a great work of art, you know?
I love that. I mean, how can I make that sweet spot for myself?
I just want to get back to Binghamton for one moment.
Absolutely.
Reference was made to the Ark. Yes, we must. otherwise, we can meet at the Red Dot and trade
Absolutely.
Stories. Another time, but the any arch.
Actually, any time, given Ellen and the Red Dot, you know what I mean?
Just show up. Always been there, and I just
not true.
Oh, I was going to say I don't remember you being there.
She usually goes a little earlier than you do.
Does she? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Your question: the arch.
The arch said on it yes. says on it still
still
I think,
does
home of the square deal. And it had to do with Binghamton is part of the Triple Cities, Binghamton, Johnson City, Endicott. And you can't tell when you're going from one to the other.
Until you go through the arch.
The arch takes you into Johnson City.
From
isn't
Binghamton,
that right?
Yes.
Where the Endicott Johnson Shoe Factory was.
Correct.
It was Charles F. Johnson Jr. who was giving the square deal.
That's right. Do you remember what the square deal is?
No.
I don't either. I hate to say I don't either.
I think it had to do with the fact that he supported his workers in many ways in order to keep the union from taking over.
Correct.
He built worker housing.
Correct.
My mother and father both worked there, so and my grandmother too, actually, at a certain time. And
the shoe factory.
The shoe factory. Mm. And they had... health. They had clinics
yes.
for medical care,
mm-hmm.
Where I was taken as a kid,
mm-hmm.
And I think they had entertainment of a sort. Wasn't there
they
a pavilion?
Did. Oh my!
The
gosh.
EJ Pavilion.
My junior prom.
Tommy
yes.
Dorsey played there.
Yes.
I mean, it was.
They that was just
really
that's
just
pretty swinging.
2 years
pretty
ago
swinging.
Was when it finally stopped being that ballroom, and now it's a bank.
No.
Honest to gosh. Honest to gosh. What was it called? It was... No. There was a special name for it.
Enjoy.
No, it wasn't the Enjoy. It was... No. It'll come to me.
Well,
but
we'll,
they all had their ballrooms. Even IBM had that. Do you remember the beautiful IBM ballroom in Endicott?
I don't.
It was fantastic, and it's still there. It's gorgeous.
Well, let's hope that our listening audience, that some of them could be from the Binghamton area, and we haven't bored them.
Or if they're not, they're
totally.
Going to want to go look at this arch.
Yeah, the arch.
I'm planning a trip right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Now you're pushing
Enough
it.
About that. We've enjoyed having you here. And
wait, there's quite a music program at Binghamton, isn't there? Isn't there an orchestra?
There was
an opera company.
It's the Tri-Cities Opera Company, which at one point was the only teaching opera company in the United States. And I think they've been around now. It's almost 50 years they're going on. It's still there.
What was art commerce like in Binghamton? Was it easier there or harder? I mean...
It was interesting. When the gallery had opened, it was before the collapse of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know... The gallery that I had, and I actually had a business partner at the time, and we kind of stole the show for lack. I mean, I hate to say it that way because it sounds so arrogant, but
that's all right. We treasure arrogance on this show.
Oh, excellent. Good. But we very specifically had put ourselves in a place that was separate from everyone else, that had to be a destination. You had to be determined that you were going to be there, that you were coming there for a reason. And, you know, we would have openings and it would be 300, 400 people and it would be a packed house. And my grandmother was at every one of them. You should see the pictures. She got all dressed up for these occasions.
You know, I'm just amazed because I grew up in the area, as you know, and I don't remember any art galleries at all.
There were none. And then suddenly 35 of them sprung up in a course of 5 years.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty
like
insane.
Hudson.
They're all on State Street and sort of spread out a little bit. It's interesting. The commerce, it was different. I mean, sales were great. But when the economy went there, you know, most of the clients there, their money went along with it. So being here in Hudson, is it easier? It's just different. I mean, I still love what I do. That doesn't change, and it makes me wake up every morning. So,
but did you draw from the city there as well? I mean, could you?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, okay. Yes, you did. You did. A lot of people came in. I mean, with the college there, there were a lot of families that would come in to visit their kids, and they do an art walk in Binghamton the first Friday of every month, and that has really gained quite a reputation as well. And it's, you know, I mean, there's great calibers, many calibers of art there. I mean, my dear friend Tony Brunelli, who is in the top three photorealists in the world and is actually represented by Mizell, Louis Mizell in New York, has a gallery there. And it's just world class, top of the line, two floors, amazing. Mm. And there are little artist co-ops as well. So you never know. Mm. I mean, it's interesting. It's very diverse.
Wow.
Well, Ellen, this has been enlightening.
It certainly has.
And I want to recommend to our dozen listeners to get
it. No, we're up to like 18 or so.
Oh, now. Really? Okay, yeah. Good.
I think you have more than that.
19. Yeah. Well, because I know you're going to be listening.
We will after this. We will after this.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Because R. Wells, as he's known from his gallery, is quite the man about town.
Oh, I just get called the man with the beard. I don't even get a name anymore. I'm thinking about taking it off for that very reason.
Well, he's got a carefully curated beard, but we learned it's not so curated. It's actually quite natural.
It does its own thing.
It's pretty cool. First thing I noticed about you out there at the Red Dot, Ellen's favorite hangout. Anyway, his current show of Gerald DiGiusto is still hanging in his gallery here on the 700 block. I could say here on the 700 block, even though we're not on Warren Street, can I?
Yes, you can.
Okay, because I go to you for that kind of advice.
We're on the 700 block of Columbia Street.
Yeah, because you're kind of an official person.
And you're up on the hill.
And yeah.
We're uptown.
So get over there and see this show before it comes down, because it's really, a really great show. I said that a little bit like Ed Sullivan, didn't you think?
Really great.
Really great.
Nice.
I hope the gallery stays there forever. It's a great little spot to have those three in a row there, and then
I love
it. And then that fourth weirdo one, a little bit. We had him on too.
The fourth weirdo one. Who's that?
You know,
that?
Concepto.
Oh yeah, but you know, weird is good. It's Hudson. It all works.
Oh, Ellen just admonished me for calling it weird. Sorry, Ellen. The unusual one. The one with the art that challenges you.
It's conceptual art.
It's conceptual.
It's conceptual art. It's different.
That's why it's called concept.
By the way, Ellen, for some people, weird is not a negative thing.
No, I know.
Okay. I like weird.
I take it all back. I take the look back.
Oh, if they could have seen, that look cannot be taken back. I think to the quick.
I think, you know, one of the things, and I want to add about the art community here in Hudson. I mean, there's a pretty incredible array of a variety of galleries in this town when you think about it. There are galleries selling very commercial, gratuitous works. There are galleries like the Caldwell Gallery, which just opened in the Old Dogs of Hudson, where you can go and see first-tier American Impressionist paintings for sale that are incredible. I mean, just incredible. Mm-hmm. And we have Concepto, and, you know, we have Zach Foyer. We just have so many different things going on here that there's really something for everybody. And I think that's...
Like 510 is sort of a co-op type.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's fantastic. And I hope that Hudson continues to grow and expand, and the number of galleries continue to do the same. It just,
well, that's what I always liked, even in the world of antiques here, is that there are, you know, I like junk shops more than I do high-end antique stores.
Me
you
too.
Know, and but we have both.
You
that's
do,
right. You know, and it's kind of neat.
It's something for everybody,
yeah.
And I think that's great.
And we have a community radio station,
which is fantastic.
Also for everybody,
we think so.
You know, I've been asking the last, since I spoke to you yesterday on the phone, everyone I know about that station, and they all have a favorite program at some point. What is the one that's on at 8 o'clock in the morning?
Democracy Now.
Yes, I was told that if I was airing at 8 a.m. that I was in trouble because that was their favorite show. Everyone else said your show was their favorite.
Oh, name names now. I want their name, their address.
It's a small town. I can't do that. Sorry.
Do you know what comes on tonight?
What?
Well, we have a news show at 6 and then another sort of news thing at 6:30, but it's 7 o'clock. Do you know what comes on?
What?
The Jazz Disturbance with Cheryl Kay, who I'm looking at through the window right now.
Oh, that's a great
program. Are you doing
program.
Your makeup?
Sounds very exciting.
Are you doing your makeup over there?
Is that the lady I scared when I came in?
Oh, no, sorry. It's her phone. It's just one of those open phone things. No, she's not the one. I thought you were like, I don't know. What do I know? But no, the lady you scared is our Jess of all trades and producer Jess Puglisi, who is moving on to bigger and better things, sort of.
What does that mean?
She's joining our umbrella organization called Wave Farm.
And that is?
It's located in...
It's the Acre Studio.
Green County.
In Green County, where our actual tower is, our transmission tower. And it's an organization that includes WGXC.
Mm-hmm.
And they do all that transmission arts that mm-hmm. we have late at night and on Saturdays primarily. And I don't know if they like being called our parent organization, but it's an umbrella organization. We're part of it.
Well, they can say whatever they want, but they don't live in the 12534.
That's true.
That's right. I have a big thing about that.
About not living in the 12534. We have to reach out to the whatever it is over there.
Oh, I agree. We have to reach out to everybody. But there are many people I meet that are moving into town that say they live in Hudson. And I'm like, where are you?
I know.
And then they tell me, and I'm like, no.
Their post office address.
Yeah,
let me tell you.
Exactly. What's your zip code?
Well, no.
It is the same
You can
zip
have
code.
The same zip code and not actually live
really?
In the city. That is correct.
Oh, boy. I feel like an idiot now. I better go look at that zip code map.
Yeah, if their mailing address is Hudson, it's 12534. Yeah.
Right.
Though they could be living in Greenport.
That's what I'm saying, and that's not 12534, though.
It is. Yeah, it is. That's the
is
weird
it
thing.
Really?
Yeah.
The post office for that whole bigger area than just Hudson.
Oh, I feel ignorant now. That's all right. It happens at least three times a day.
I grew up in fake. I grew up in fake zip codes.
You did?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Sad.
Well, I lived. My address was in Scarsdale with the Scarsdale zip code, but the place where I lived was not Scarsdale. They do that in Westchester a lot, and it's a real estate thing, you know, to get people to they live in Scarsdale. Well, you don't live in Scarsdale. Try going to the school there or the public pool there, and you find out you don't live in that town.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a downstate thing, I think, mainly. Where people are more, you know,
I think it has more to do with the federal government who control the post office.
Well, there you go. That brings us back to our earlier conversation about federalism.
That's right.
And why I was glad Alexander Hamilton got shot by Aaron Burr.
I mean,
oh my gosh.
We have a variety of topics here.
Oh, that's
well, there's
cool.
a new there's
Thursday
a,
afternoon
Aaron
show.
Burr, what was that? Aaron Burr, Aaron Burr Cider? What was that?
Yeah, the Aaron Burr Cider. It's going to be offered for tasting at Hudson Wine Merchants.
Did you hear that, Ron?
Friday night. Yeah, it's Cider Week
at
here
what time
in
does that
Hudson
start?
Valley. 5 to 7 at the Hudson Wine Merchants.
I don't know if I'll be able to attend that.
You'll be
it's too early for you?
Well, I close at 5 o'clock, but then I finish up Dollar Oyster Night at Swoon, which goes from 3 to 6 on Friday.
Is it still going? I thought it was over.
No, it was going on last week. I hope. Oh, dear. You might have just ruined my Friday nights. I'll have to check this out. But tonight is Burger Night, right?
It's Thursday. Yes, it's
okay,
Burger
good.
Night. So, if you want to meet Ronald Wells, you know where to go on Friday and Thursday. Look for the guy with the carefully
You'll
curated
beard.
You'll
know him by the beard.
You'll know him by the beard.
You'll know by the beard.
Well, Ronald, thanks for coming in. He is the proprietor, the purveyor of, well, at R. Wells Gallery at number 725. Thank you, Ellen. 25 Warren Street here in the beautiful city of Hudson, New York.